Hey friends, welcome to another episode of Voices of Hope. We have Rick Young on the episode today, and Rick is an artist who does oil paintings of the Western landscape. Rick has also been a teacher in the public school system for many years and now is retired. We talk all about how his faith influences his art, and we also talk about things like what makes a good political cartoon. And we talk about so much more, and I hope you enjoy this wonderful conversation with my friend Rick Young.
I'm glad I wore my this what I call my Target outfit today. Yeah. I always make sure when I wear this red polo and blue jeans that I don't go to Target that day because I feel like somebody's gonna come up to me and ask me where the laundry detergent is. Well, Rick, thanks for joining me on this podcast. I wanted you on because you are an artist,
right?
And you paint. Is there other things that you do?
Well, right now it's almost entirely oil painting and mainly landscapes. In the past, I've done a fair amount of cartooning and caricature. And actually, I got away from oil painting for several decades. You know, I was into that in high school. And then in college, I got kind of disillusioned with the fine art scene and just instead turned my focus to graphic design. Doing some cartooning and caricature, but not any painting.
Why'd you get disillusioned in college with fine art?
When I was taking these fine art classes at first, I really loved it and was inspired. And then it just seemed like a lot of people were playing games and being posers and doing just provocative things and trying to be avant-garde. And I thought,
Provocative for the sake of just being provocative?
Yes. So I kind of burned out on fine art. And I did still have fun with cartooning and caricature. For years, I would do a class portrait caricature of the graduates at DC Oaks until there started to be too many of them. But then I kind of rediscovered painting about 18, 19 years ago and decided to revisit oil painting after 20, 25 years off.
And what were you doing in between all that time?
Well, I had, after a time up in the mountains where I was sort of a ski and hiking and climbing bum, I did get a job in advertising graphics, graphic design. Didn't particularly like it. Switched careers to teaching. So the only art that I was doing during that time was some caricature and cartooning. I did some political cartoons for local papers here and there.
Okay.
And then that was pretty much it until I decided to get back to painting about 18, 19 years ago.
What did you teach?
History, religions, government, and art.
Ooh.
It was a fun mix. I really enjoyed that.
Political conversations are interesting with you.
I was a poli-sci minor and have always been interested in political matters.
Yeah.
So.
It's funny you talk about being disillusioned with fine art in college, because I actually had a, my cord is caught here, a scholarship in college for drama, and I loved theater, and I loved all that, except when I started it my freshman year, first of all, my very first play was A Winter's Tale by Shakespeare in college.
I'm not familiar with that one.
Well, just Shakespeare in general is hard to act in. And, you know, that transition, jumping into college, and all of a sudden you're doing this, and you're getting used to all the classes and being on your own. It was like a perfect storm of...
Mm-hmm.
And then the people, even though it was a small liberal arts Christian college, I felt like the people took themselves way too seriously, if that makes sense. Like... I thought theater should be fun, like I did, because I loved it.
Right.
But these, some of these people, that was their major, and so they were super, and they got clicky, and it was just like a weird...
Yeah, and it does seem like sometimes, sadly, that can attract people who are sort of exhibitionist personalities. Which is one thing I love about the drama ministry here at New Hope, because it is not at all like that.
Right.
It's just people who like to act and don't need to be center of attention, and I love that, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So, what drew you to art? Like, have you always been an artistic person?
Yeah, or? You know, I mean, growing up as a kid in school, I would do all sorts of doodling and weird little cartoon characters on my school notebooks, you know, so I started that way and then studied art mainly because I was good at it. Then, like I say, I kind of drifted away from it. And it's interesting, what I was mainly drawing or painting was people. You know, often odd characters or whatever. Portraits, people, figure drawing, cartoons, it was all people-oriented. And when I was drawn back to art a while back, it was more of the landscape. From that point on, it's like I've been totally focused on landscape painting. And that kind of began when Mary and I bought some land down in southern Colorado near Trinidad. And then we built a cabin there. And that's really the Southwest. It's canyons and mesas, pinyon, juniper, cactus. It's not Colorado mountains. And that really began a fascination for me with the Southwest, with the landscape, and with the peoples of the Southwest. And I wanted to paint it. So that kind of led me to get back to trying painting. And so I'm really focused on the landscape. I don't have much interest to paint people now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as I did in the past.
Yeah, it's just more landscape.
So I have fun driving around with my camera and just taking a lot of back roads, especially northern New Mexico. Get out on these dusty roads and take pictures. Kind of rural, southwestern countryside.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes just wilderness canyons or mesas, mountains, but a lot of times the villages and the churches, you know, where people have been scraping a living for centuries.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what really attracts me.
Yeah.
Subject-wise.
Yeah. And I loved your piece that you made for Eric when he left of the rock
of
here.
The rock. Yes, rock. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've liked a lot of your paintings, especially ones you donate to the mm-hmm. youth auction and
right.
stuff. And maybe this year I'll actually be able to bid on it. The last couple of years, you know, starting out and after grad school and stuff, you're kind of strapped for cash. But the
sure.
more years that go by, the easier it is. And mm-hmm. So maybe this year I'll... Last year I bid on a stupid Nuggets basketball team signed ball.
Oh, how trivial, Jordan, when you could be having art.
Well, it was signed by the 16-17 Nuggets team.
Oh, yeah?
And nobody was bidding on it.
Oh.
And it was one of those showcase ones, you know, the auctioneer
were doing your
and
duty.
I was trying to
yeah.
get it up, right. but I ended up buying it. Now it's sitting in my living room like, But, yeah, we really appreciate those paintings you donate.
I'm happy to do it.
Yeah. Is there any sense, like, how your faith kind of ties in with art? And do you feel like art is a way that can speak some things that words can't?
Yeah. You know, and I don't think I set out with any faith goals in mind,
mm-hmm.
but I think it's definitely there. It's kind of crept in. I mean, sometimes I'm painting churches. I do have a real soft spot for adobe churches that are just in these little towns where the townspeople created these churches. They're not some big elaborate architectural project, you know, bid on by somebody from across the world. It's just the townspeople using local materials, the earth, you know, adobe bricks, would build these. I've always been very drawn to that kind of humble, simple, down-home spiritual architecture. But aside from the churches, you know, I just like painting that landscape. And but there is a feeling, I guess, that I'm looking for in my paintings that does reflect my faith. I don't really see God as a wrathful, vengeful, you know, deity who's eager to throw people into the fires of hell. For me, God is loving and full of grace and hope and beauty and the creator of a beautiful world. And so I like to try to bring that out in my paintings. My wife will often comment when she sees a photo that I'm painting from, it's like, I like your painting a lot better. It's like the photo is just kind of it's kind of dry and dusty and not a whole lot of color. I just like to bring out, I don't know, almost a hidden beauty that I see that maybe is not always apparent on the surface in this semi-arid, you know, land that I'm fascinated with. And I just kind of feel like, or I'm trying to get paintings that make you feel good, that kind of exude some hope and optimism. And to me, that reflects my my relationship with God.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Painting something, you don't have to make it. Let me try and say, like overtly Christian, like
right.
To be a Christian thing. You don't have to paint Jesus on the cross or something like that for it to be considered a Christian art or influenced by faith in any way. I think what you're saying fits perfectly of like, this is the God I believe in. This is how I want to view the world through that lens. And that's how my art is going to kind of portray the world.
Right. So I really at this point don't have any interest in painting disturbing images or dark. Like I did when I was younger, I went through a surrealistic phase and I just wanted to paint stuff that was weird and would get a reaction. That doesn't appeal to me now.
I mean,
paintings that make people feel good and like, I want to be there. That landscape exudes something that I want to kind of experience.
Mm-hmm. I mean, don't we all go through that phase somewhat, though?
You know, I was in high school at the time, and, you know, my poor old art teacher, who painted explicitly religious subject paintings, you know, as if he was somebody from the Renaissance or Baroque Italy, you know, and I would paint these bizarre images in a very realistic fashion of somebody whose head was exploding or who was unzipping themselves, and he would just shake his head at these images. It's like his star student was just going down this dark road and he didn't know what to make of it.
But don't you think that, I mean, I see a lot of teenagers either share stuff like that online or draw it. But don't you think that's just speaking about where they're at anyway, of like the head exploding or unzipping themselves? They're trying to figure out who they are, and they can't handle all these things coming at them. They feel more than we do.
That's an emotionally turbulent time, and so I think it's natural that whatever your art is, it's going to reflect some of those uncertainties and changes. And
Lisa just made a face through the window. But if you would continue to do those paintings now, then we should probably take you aside and be like, Rick, is everything okay?
Are you okay? So hopefully now my artwork doesn't produce that reaction, like, is this guy okay?
Yeah.
No, I hope it looks like the work of somebody who is okay and who just finds a lot of beauty in the world, you know, that ultimately comes from God, and is trying to share that beauty through his art.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think, if you could simplify what you think art is supposed to do? Like, what's the mission of art?
Make viewers feel something. Mm-hmm. And that could be anything. We need art that shocks people and grabs you, you know, by the heart. And I think we need artists pointing out things that are not right with the world. And throughout history, we've had a lot of artists do that. It can be a powerful vehicle for getting people's attention and trying to shake people up. But like I say, that's not where I'm at now. But whether it's a positive reaction or a, I don't want to say negative, a reaction that's like, this isn't right. Mm-hmm. You know, either way, you want to kind of grab people and get a reaction, and specifically an emotional reaction.
Yeah. Yeah, I, as you know, or you may not know, I love movies.
Right,
and,
right.
I listen to some podcasts and read stuff online about... I really love the Oscars, and that's coming up this Sunday.
Yeah, we're gearing up for that.
Yep. Yep. And they always talk about that every year. If you look at the Oscar nominees for Best Picture, that they tend to reflect what is going on in our world that year, mm-hmm. in that time. Like, for example, like Shape of Water has the most nominations.
Right.
And you might be thinking, well, what is that? How does that reflect our culture at all? Well, that movie is all about the outcasts being oppressed and looked down on, not included. And it's also kind of a fantasy, fairy tale movie.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when it feels like the world is getting weirder and weirder and worse and worse, those fairy tale movies come back because people want that.
Sure.
You know?
It makes sense.
And so, and Three Billboards is all about...
There's a lot of negativity that movie comes out is expressing.
Yeah.
Right. And,
yeah.
If we're in a time where everything is perfect and everybody's happy, you aren't going to get those kind of movies.
No.
Art can be a powerful medium to get people to look at their world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's good about it and maybe what's not so good about it, or what could be about it.
Mm-hmm. I continue to be impressed with how we're finding ways to insert some kind of high concepts and high art into more mainstream stuff, where I don't think that used to be the case. I only say that because I saw Black Panther on Monday.
I just saw that one a few days ago, too.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, that sticks with you for a couple of days. Just think about all the imagery and different things they did and how they could insert that into a blockbuster superhero movie.
Yeah, that's very impressive. A movie that gets you to think and question some of your assumptions and stereotypes, but still is an action blockbuster.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Yeah. And I think art does that as well. When I was younger, I was probably not as kind to high art and paintings and things like that, because it's like, I mean, I used to draw and I liked it, but since then, growing older, sometimes I'll see a painting and I'll just sit there and I'll stare at it. And like, I'll be like, it's making me feel something. I don't know what it is yet. I'm trying to figure out what's going on. I'm sure you've had those experiences also. Yeah.
But at least you're giving it a chance to reach you, whereas before you might have just kind of walked past it.
Yeah. Yeah. At the end of our hallway here in the offices, there's the painting of the prodigal son.
Mm-hmm.
I think seminary helped with that, because I think we looked at that painting, and there's another one I have in a book somewhere. It might actually be in this one. Seeing the faces you wouldn't normally see in the background, just glancing at it, because they're kind of back in the dark, mm-hmm. and what does that portray, and why, I think in that painting, why is there one shoe off of the prodigal son, and stuff like right. that. So I think art, if you try at art, it helps. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You can't just sit there and just like look at it like, okay, like looks cool. I mean, you have to try and figure out
what yeah, it's saying. You have to give it some time and thought, give it a chance. I think good art is not just going to be you walk by it, look at it for 2 seconds and cool, you're done. If it really is successful in reaching you, it's going to demand a little more time, a little more thought mm-hmm. on the viewer's part.
What's your favorite piece that you have done?
Well, I don't know if I have any one favorite, but I guess I'll talk about a painting that mm-hmm. A current one that I just did last week, finished Monday, and it's of a scene at the Rio Grande del Norte National Monument, just over the state line into New Mexico. And Mary and I were camping down there, and every morning the sunrise would be very dramatic because we were camped right on the edge of this just big abyss, the Rio Grande Gorge, and it would be total darkness down there, but you'd watch the sunset play on these bizarrely shaped volcanoes rising from the mesa on either side of the Rio Grande. And just that image of the light coming to those volcanoes and to the flat rim of the mesa while it's just totally dark down below, and then you've got clouds up above that are catching the light too. And so I did a large painting of that. And I really like that image because I think this one I'm going to call it the light above the darkness, because it's such a light-dark contrast. You got this dark abyss, and you could read whatever you wanted into that darkness, but then the light above it is just, it's coming, and then eventually it's going to fill the abyss too. And I'm pretty happy with that that image. I've actually painted variations on that several times since we camped there last September. That's been one of my go-to subjects, just because I think topographically it's such a strong landscape that you just have to react to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sounds cool. How long does it take you usually to make?
Well, you know, there's the time getting the photo, which I can spend a lot of time looking for scenes and light conditions that appeal to me. And then I'll do a drawing from the photo to kind of get my composition, sketch that onto the campus. And then usually I'll do a really intensive marathon day, maybe 10 hours to try to block in most of a painting. Or if it's a bigger painting like this one was, spend a day and a half on that. And then maybe a week later when it's mostly dry, come in and do a few final touches. So it's pretty short and intense that I really get into one painting at a time.
Yeah. But there's still a ton of hours put in.
Yeah, when you add up the whole thing, from looking for the scene and the photo to the drawing to blocking in the painting and then, you know, final details. Yeah, it's a fair amount of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you think that's something that a lot of people don't quite understand, that when they want to buy art or something, they're like, why is it so expensive? And
yeah, I mean, the why is it so expensive is a natural question. I don't know that with my painting, I don't think people look at it and say, oh, you know, I could just slap that out in a couple hours, so it's not worth why.
Right.
And, yeah. whereas with some more abstract modern art, you might get that reaction.
The thrown paint
on
the wall.
Yeah. So I don't think I get that, but mm-hmm. It's natural. It is natural for people to wonder, why is this so darn expensive?
Yeah.
I spend a lot of money on materials, mm-hmm. even more on framing,
uh-huh.
and then half goes to the gallery, and mm-hmm. I don't begrudge them that at all. They earn every penny of it. Mm-hmm. So when all is said and done, there's not that much,
right.
know, really, that's coming to the artist. So that's kind of why the price is what it is.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. That's something I think people always need to keep in mind with stuff like that, because mm-hmm. it's higher price because the artist isn't getting very much, and you gotta make it higher in order to get something.
Yeah, yes, that's basically what it comes down to.
While we were talking about some things, I was thinking about there's this very 6-minute documentary online of Jim Carrey. I think it's called Jim Carrey Needed Color. Have you seen that at all?
Mm-mm, no.
It's really interesting because you haven't seen him in a movie for a long time, right?
Right.
So he has actually been painting and sculpting and doing stuff like that. And
interesting.
And so you see some of his artwork in it, and he talks about the process. And one of the paintings that he showed that I really love, that I wish I could have enough money to purchase one day, is of Jesus. And it's the face of Jesus. And somehow he was able to almost make Jesus look like every single race on the earth in one face.
That's interesting.
And he said he did it because he says, you know, when people think of Jesus, they obviously think of Jesus in their ethnicity and their race. Yeah. And but to have Jesus portray all the diversity in the world, that it's impressive painting. But you should watch that.
Okay.
I think you'd like it.
It's called Jim Carrey.
Color. Or? After this, I'll pull it up and I can email the link to you.
That does sound interesting.
Yeah. So, is there anything like that what's a piece of art that has made you sit there and look at it that really sticks out to you over time?
Oh gosh, so many pieces. I mean, I'm fortunate enough to be in a nice gallery in Santa Fe now, but when I go down there, you know, I go fairly often. I just love popping into museums, galleries, whatever. There is so much amazing art down there, and I don't know that I could pick out any one piece.
You could do a couple.
But, you know, again, I really am drawn to landscape because mm-hmm. that's what speaks to me or inspires me as an artist. And I guess I'm looking at things like capturing lighting, you know, and conveying mood, since those mm-hmm. are the things that I'm trying to do. And there are so many good Western artists that I can spend a lot of time in front of a painting, like down at the New Mexico Museum of Art, which is such a beautiful old Pueblo Revival style building. Mm-hmm. And they've got these wonderful paintings from like the Taos School of Painters and various Santa Fe painters, and all these artists who spent a lot of time, if not fully relocating to New Mexico, who I think were doing the same thing that I'm trying to do, and just seeing what they get out of the landscape and how the images that they create from that starting point, it just really, it's something that I can dig into for a long time.
Geek out on it.
Yep.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
So going back to you used to do caricatures and things like that, do you think we can do a Google search and find any of your political cartoons online?
I doubt it, considering I was doing cartoons for the Granby Sky High News, and then the short-lived Castle Rock Daily Star, which existed for 2 or 3 years, and it had a, it was a tough thing to keep going financially. So then it no longer was daily, and then it eventually just went out of business, owing me and a lot of other people money. So, anyways, though, you'd have probably have a hard time finding cartoons from those two particular papers. That, and you know, I've got a collection in my basement of these giant class portrait caricatures that I would do at DC Oaks of the graduates. Those were fun, but oh, they would kill me, because you wouldn't know until the last minute, all right, who all's going to actually graduate, you know, tomorrow?
Yeah.
Because have they got all their last minute credits and extra stuff in? So I would end up staying up, pulling an all-nighter, doing these gargantuan, you know, 20 feet long portraits with everybody in there. And Mary finally got me to stop, because that was just killing me. And the as the school grew over the years, you know, when I started, there were only 36 students, and then it got up to like 140 or more, so the graduating classes got too big, and that had to stop. But I've got an archive of those downstairs in my basement. I don't know if you'd find those online anywhere, though.
So when you do a political cartoon or a caricature or whatever, what's the point? What's the mission of that? How, what are you supposed to be doing with? Because I love some of them. I think they're funny. Other ones, I'm like, I don't quite get it. But what are you trying to do with those political cartoons?
You're trying to say something, to make a point, to take a stand. I mean, political cartoonists, it's like an editorial writer or an op-ed column writer. You have an opinion and you're trying to get it across. But in the case of a cartoon, you're doing it visually, maybe through a few words, a little speech bubble. So yeah, you're saying something. Maybe taking a shot at a government policy or a government official that, that you think is not doing his or her job. So there is a, you know, that kind of a, it can be a sort of a negative or aggressive. You're calling out somebody or something that you don't think is right, generally. And you're trying to capture the personality of whoever you're doing. If it's just a straight caricature, that's what it's all about. You want to convey that person, who they are, what they're like, what they do, with an image. So those can be fun.
Do you think there's a line between just making fun of somebody personally, and or trying to point out some truth that we keep ignoring?
Well, absolutely. I mean, there's a danger there that you could just get mean-spirited. And I would say that the times when I was doing political cartoons, I never wanted to do a political attack on somebody. It was calling into question what they were doing politically or business-wise or in terms of public life.
No, I'm
not into personal attacks, and I do not want to try and eviscerate somebody. That's not who I am. And yeah, I think there's a power to art, it could be used for good or for ill. You mm-hmm. can go too far, so you gotta kind of have some limits.
That's the line everybody dances around in art, or particularly I think about the comedy political talk shows mm-hmm. That they have to dance that fine line of is this mean-spirited or is this, because the point of comedy, I think, especially whether it's stand-up or these political shows, the point of comedy is to point out the absurdity of life and the things that we're mm-hmm. doing. And that's why I think comedy and politics in a like a Daily Show or Stephen Colbert or something like mm-hmm. that is great, because they can use that comedy to bring out the question of what are we doing?
Yeah, and get you to take a fresh look at the way things are and maybe question mm-hmm. the status quo. And yeah, absolutely. Comedy is great for that. Art. Mm-hmm. That's a natural thing for art to be used for. And is art sometimes taken too far? Sure, you mm-hmm. bet. You know, just like comedy that's in poor taste.
Yeah. Yeah, I always find somebody like, I don't even know what the show is called, but Bill Maher's show.
Oh, I've never watched him, but I know of him.
Yeah.
Whenever I hear of him, when I hear clips of him, it does seem to be the mean-spirited thing. And it's like, oh, no, that's not okay. Yeah.
I watched it. He did a documentary called Religious.
I heard of that, but never saw it.
Yeah, it's just kind of talking about the ridiculousness of religion. And some of it is really good points. Like, I think he makes some good points, but it's overshadowed by the mean spirit of it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So, like you said, art, too, can do that.
Just tearing something down doesn't really have any social benefit or spiritual benefit to your viewer or your listener. It's like, I think there's got to be something bigger that you're aiming for than just mocking people and the way they do things.
Yeah. I think sometimes that fine line with art, I think sometimes if something seems offensive or absurd in a painting, like it's meant to shock, mm-hmm. Some people are just see it and they're like, no, that's awful. But they don't take the time to look at themselves and be like, why does that offend mm-hmm. me so much? I'm just trying to think of, I remember when I was in high school, there is a local liberal arts Christian college, Northwestern College, in Orange City, Iowa. And at any of those colleges where it's small and you're in a area that's predominantly conservative, if you look up Sioux County, Iowa, every election there's articles done by the New Yorker, by Washington Post on Northwest Iowa, Sioux County, because it is deep. Oh gosh, what is Republican color red?
Yeah.
So it's like deep red, you know. So whenever you have a situation like that and you have an academic institution that is helping kids in the moment of their lives where they're becoming people, they're of course are going to start pushing back in some ways.
Sure.
And I remember somebody did a piece of art, and they had a gallery that people could come look at stuff. A piece of art, I think, if I remember correctly, it was the American flag, but it was black and white, and it was upside down.
Okay.
Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. That created all kinds of chaos in my home area. Without any talk of what was the artist trying to portray, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And everybody started talking about, well, it's disrespectful to the flag and all that. And I understand that, but there's a lot of other things we do that's disrespectful to the flag. But why is this one in particular upsetting to you? And So I think art can tell us a lot about ourselves the way.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's, yeah, when you take on a symbol like the flag, I think that the challenge for an artist is so that you don't just come off as slapping people in the face mm-hmm. and defacing the flag, but getting them to get past that initial shock to maybe to ask the questions, well, why is the artist feeling this way? And I'm not sure how to always get people past the initial shock and anger. If that's all the art does, then you're not going to get a conversation coming out of it.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to grab people by the shirt collar,
mm-hmm.
but then somehow lead them into a conversation that the artist is trying to start.
Yeah.
How to do that is the tricky part.
Right.
Because too often I think we just get the angry shock,
mm-hmm.
and that's the end of it.
Yeah.
And then you remove the art from the wall and everybody's right. unhappy.
Yeah. Well, in that particular situation too, it's a local college and people are saying, well, I'm going to stop giving.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and that stuff happens. And but that's small town Iowa life. So, so
thank goodness you got out of that.
Art can be provocative and shocking, and but yeah, I think it. If we try and remember, like, why, or with anything we do, we should ask why. Why are we, you know, making that painting? Why mm-hmm. are we making this film? Why are we preaching this sermon? Is an important question. So
we need artists to do that. Uh-huh. I can't say I'm doing that at this point. Mine is the more, I hope,
yeah,
you know, the more feel good,
mm-hmm.
more like a you know, a painting as a sanctuary, a source of peace. But we need artists that are going to challenge us too.
Mm-hmm. I think with your work, what I've seen in it is you're trying to find, and you've talked about it a little bit, but you're finding the sacred in the ordinary. You're finding the ordinary landscapes, but you're pointing out the beauty of it, the mm-hmm. sacredness of it. Sometimes we just forget, like, that our landscape is just our background. It turns into white noise for us.
Mm-hmm.
But to really sit there and look at the beauty of creation, how unique it is. Yeah. Like,
I mean, think about clouds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how often we just kind of take for granted or ignore them, or all that we notice is it cloudy or is it clear today? You know, am I going to get my tan or need to put my sunblock on, or is there sun coming? You know, but to look at clouds, oh, they're just so incredibly beautiful. I think here, especially Colorado, New Mexico, the variety of clouds, the shapes, the way they reflect the light, they are just so darn beautiful. And mm-hmm. and that's one thing I like about being as an artist, as you know, you mentioned finding the beautiful or the sacred in the ordinary, is just paying attention to, okay, what's going on up in the sky? And it's like, oh wow, I would like to paint that configuration of clouds, those shapes, those colors and play of light. There's some real beauty there. You just got to take the time to stop and recognize it. And too often we take for granted, I think, the beauty of living in Colorado. It's like, oh yeah, the mountains are over that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, yeah. The mountains are west.
Yeah, they help me remember which way is west and which way is east. You know. When you go back to those flat states, oh, it's heck navigating.
Everybody's confused. Well, Rick, is there anything else you want to talk about? Is you feel like we talked about something, we didn't quite close it, or do you feel good about it?
I think we probably covered enough to give people something to think about.
Yeah.
I hope.
Okay. That sounds good. I'm still trying to figure out how to end these podcasts. First, I start asking people what their favorite movie was at the end of it. Do you have a favorite movie?
You know, again, I'm not a person who has a favorite this, favorite that. So I'm going to go with favorites. The current stuff with, you know, and we're big Oscar fans and movie watchers, and we've been gearing up for this Sunday's Oscars, trying to see as many of the Best Picture nominees as we can. And I think my favorite movie right at this point would be the Three Billboards. Not that it's an easy movie. Not always pleasant, but what a powerful statement. Just a bizarre story that is told so effectively in a way that it grabs you and makes you think.
It has so many layers.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen it twice.
Oh, have you?
Yeah, and so, like, you glean new things from it each time.
Oh, I'm sure. And just the, you know, the little stories about how there's... Nobody in there is a saint, and nobody is purely evil either, except maybe the one stranger passing through who's clearly a bad guy. Everybody else, they're so complicated, and they're both, they're good and bad, and at various times the good comes through, and other times the bad, and you see characters transform, and that to me is just really powerful. You can't just pigeonhole the characters in that story the way it's told. So,
I really,
for the moment, that'll be my favorite.
I really hope Sam Rockwell gets the Best Supporting Actor.
Yeah, I bet he does.
Because I've liked him for a long time in a lot of different movies he's been in. But this one, and seen it twice, the first time I was like, whatever. But the second time when I watched it, I saw the transformation he made throughout the movie.
Yeah.
And it's a really incredible role. It's a quiet one, but it's...
Yeah, fascinating character. He really plays it to the hilt. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'd get my vote, too.
How many Best Picture nominees have you seen?
Let's see. I think we've seen...
Because I think there's nine or eight.
All but two. We haven't seen The Phantom Thread, which just looked too depressing to me. And, like, I don't want to see another movie about some... rich, talented guy who's so powerful and plays games with people. And we haven't seen Call Me By Your Name, so I think we've seen the rest other than those two.
I only have one left to see of the Best Picture nominees. That's The Darkest Hour, which we have it on digital. We're going to watch it before Sunday. But
yeah, that's good.
We just haven't watched it.
Okay.
But Phantom Thread is one of my favorites.
Really?
It's not what you think.
Okay.
It's actually really bizarre.
Maybe I need to give it a chance.
It's one of those movies, and I don't know if many people will relate to this, but like I left the theater, and I was like, I don't understand what I just saw. And I was kind of like, I don't know if I liked it. But then the next day, I kept thinking about it, and I was like, I think I really like that movie.
All right, that's art for you.
Yeah, because I kept thinking about it and what they did, and... Yeah, it's not all about him wielding his power. It's interesting. Interesting film.
I have to give that one a chance.
Yeah. Give it a chance. Then you can come talk to me if you didn't like it and reprimand me. All right. Well, thanks for joining us, Rick.
No problem. Glad it was fun to sit and talk about art.
All right. And if people want to see your art, do you have a website?
Yeah, it's www.rickyoungfineart.com.
Okay. And can they purchase it on there at all, or do they have
just
to go galleries?
Not directly. They can either go to one of the two galleries. I'm at 45 Degree Gallery in Colorado Springs and Acosta Strong Fine Art down in Santa Fe. Or they can just call me up.
Okay. Sounds good. Thanks for joining us.
You bet.